Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome to episode 461 with my guest, Alisa Kennedy Jones. Today's episode is sponsored by Squarespace. Turn your great idea into a reality with Squarespace. Squarespace makes it easier than ever to launch your passion project, whether you're showcasing your work or selling products of any kind. With beautiful templates and the ability to customize just about anything, you can easily make a beautiful website yourself. And if you do get stuck, Squarespace's 24/7 award-winning customer support is there to help. So head to squarespace.com/mental for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code MENTAL to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. My name is Paul Gilmartin, and this is the Mental Illness Happy Hour, a place for honesty about all the battles in our heads, from medically diagnosed conditions, past traumas, and sexual dysfunction to everyday compulsive negative thinking. This show's not meant to be a substitute for professional. Listen, I don't have time to pronounce my R's. We gotta get to the interview. The show is not meant to be a substitute for professional mental counseling. I am not a therapist. It's not a doctor's office. More like a waiting room that doesn't suck. The social media handles you can follow the show at MentalPod and MentalPod.com, also the website for this show. Feeling better than I did last week. Those of you that listened to last week's episode, it was pretty short. I was pretty depressed. I think the fall depression kind of hit me full force, and just doing the podcast felt like lifting 500 pounds. And so I thought I'd practice what I preach, and was nice to myself and just read two surveys, kept it short and sweet, and went back to bed. But I'm feeling a lot better this week. I want to read something from the Love Survey. This was filled out by Lucy, and she writes, "I love the way my dog stretches when he wakes with his legs out straight and then relaxes. He might also be saluting Hitler. Can't rule that out. I love the way he sneezes to get my attention, especially to get treats, and keeps sneezing all the way to the kitchen. It even makes me smile when he gets up in the middle of the night under the guise of, surely, if he is this insistent, he must need to go outside and use the bathroom. No, he just wants a treat in the middle of the night. And I love how his feet smell like hay when he's snuggled up close to me." I always thought that they smell more like Fritos, but I do like, I like just about every smell that has to do with my dogs, not other dogs, except Gracie's gas is there's nothing lovable about that, but I even love the smell of her bad breath. Love the smell of her feet. This is the same survey filled out by a non-binary person who calls themselves, "My gender is T-Rex." And they write, I love when I'm watching a movie and I think I already know the plot because I've seen the trailer, and then something happens 30 minutes in that I genuinely did not see coming. I love when I'm really struggling with my mental health, but I follow my safety plan anyways, taking it on pure faith that this won't last forever. And later I'm able to look back and see that I was right and feel so, so proud of myself for trusting even when I didn't believe. I love when I set a boundary with someone I want to like me, so I'm sure I'm going to lose them as a friend, and they react to my share like, oh, of course, like they're genuinely glad to help me feel safe, comfortable, and okay. And I love when I believe them. I love my toes. I just think my toes have a better, prettier, rounder shape than most people's toes. It's not even a sexual thing. Well, too late. 9 people are already masturbating to the picture of your toes. Just a little piece of vanity that I allow myself to enjoy. Those are awesome. Thank you for that. Any comments to make the podcast better? I just want you to know that when you repeat yourself, even if it's something you've said and I've heard 1,000 times, they are almost always things I still need to hear. Things like, it wasn't your fault. They were the parent in the situation. It's normal and okay to have sexual fantasies that relate to your trauma. It doesn't make you a bad feminist. In the parentheses, that one especially. Also, I love all your terrible jokes. The worse, the better. So keep letting you love you. Thank you so much for that. This is from a guy who calls himself That One Guy. And his love, my unnecessary and ridiculous car projects. I love that. I love that. I am so impatient sometimes when I'm woodworking that I will fuck up and ruin pieces of wood, like yesterday. And I'm just like, well, now I got more firewood. If I had a woodworking show, that's what it would be called. It would be called Firewood. But it's one of those things that I have had to really work on to not be too hard on myself and just go, you know what, I make mistakes. The way I woodwork is, yeah, I don't sketch things out. I don't plan as much as other people. But it's a way I like to work. And so sometimes I contribute to destroying the earth and making Venice flood. Any comments to make the podcast better? I listened to your most recent interview about narcissists and would love to hear from someone on the other side of the spectrum, the quote abuser who has or is making changes to be a better person and heal the darker parts of their self. I'm sure we have touched on that in different episodes. I don't know if we've ever done an episode directly related to that, but I've shared moments from my life and struggles and shortcomings that I've worked on. And if you're a regular listener to the show, I'm sure you've probably heard me share about that. And I mean, if you're looking to hear from somebody who has narcissistic personality disorder, I don't think you're ever going to have a guest on the podcast, because any true narcissist would not say that they're a narcissist. I think people who have narcissistic qualities might do that. And I would say that I might be one of those people. I just wanted to talk about myself. This episode is sponsored by When Breath Becomes Air. When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi is the exquisitely observed memoir of an idealistic young neurosurgeon attempting to answer the question, what makes a life worth living, as he deals with his own terminal cancer diagnosis. It's a stunning reminder to live while we are alive, a must-read for anyone in medicine, from a doctor turned patient. For healthcare workers, expand your view on patient care and the fragile beauty of our mortal lives through Kalanithi's unforgettable words. Some of the questions Kalanithi wrestles with in this book include, what makes life worth living in the face of death? What do you do when the future flattens out into a perpetual present? When the future is no longer a ladder towards your goals in life? What does it mean to have a child, to nurture a new life as another fades away? When Breath Becomes Air is a number one New York Times bestseller, Pulitzer Prize finalist, and named one of the best books of the year by the New York Times Book Review, People, NPR, The Washington Post, Slate, and more. When Breath Becomes Air is available wherever books are sold. Learn more at prh.com/breath.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is a love from Laura. She writes, I love moments, far too rare, when I feel comfortable in my own skin. No struggle, shame, or stigma. No explanations necessary. For a while, everything's good. Love it. Today's episode is sponsored by, drumroll, Roman. A lot of people are uncomfortable talking about erectile dysfunction. I love it. I will talk about it in a crowded elevator. I will talk about it. But seriously, with Roman, you can get a free online evaluation. Actually, I'm not ashamed to talk about it. It would be like being ashamed that you have, you know, diabetes or, I don't know. You fill in the medical struggle. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. I use Roman. It is way cheaper than my insurance. It's simple to use. They ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. It's simple, straightforward. Just go to roman.com/metal and complete an online visit. It's nice having those around. If, you know, I'm in a period of my life where I'm struggling with that, it helps me relax, and that's enough for me, my personal stuff. So go to GetRoman.com/mental to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/mental for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/mental. And as always, I'll put the links to this stuff under the show notes for the episode. We are also sponsored by BetterHelp.com. I talk every week about how much I love doing online counseling, and I love my counselor, Donna. And we have worked through so many issues over the last couple of years that I've been seeing her. And so if you're interested in trying online therapy from the comfort of your home, go to betterhelp.com/mental. Make sure you include the /mental part so they know you come from this podcast. And then fill out a questionnaire. They will match you with a betterhelp.com counselor, and you can experience a free week of counseling to see if it is right for you, and you need to be over 18. You can also correspond with your counselor through email, live text, chat, phone, smoke signal, Morse code, Pony Express, Greek Messenger, although he's always out of breath. And it's sometimes hard for them to really convey what you're... But it is cool seeing a human being with winged feet. And then finally, before we get to the interview, these are some loves from a woman who calls herself Meditating Kitty. And she writes, I love it when I share something that has caused me pain and hurt with someone, and they say, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. That must have really hurt. I see you, and I will hold you safe. I love when a perfectly sad, haunting, and longing song comes on and I turn up the sound and I can feel the beauty and intensity pulling at my heart. I love it when my husband looks in the full-length mirror and watches himself do silly dances. He is so proud of himself. These are so good. I love when my husband comes up to me in the kitchen and we start dancing to the music in our heads. My husband has no sense of rhythm, so we can't dance to actual music. I love when I can hear rain pounding on the roof, and I am reminded of a time when I lived in a village in Africa and the rain would pound so hard on the iron sheets that were the roof that we laughed and had to yell to be heard.
Nobody's cool and everyone's scared, and we're just all in this together.
There was no joy.
Overeating.
Apathy doesn't leave any marks.
Numbing out.
physically.
I wish that I was a girl.
Panic attacks were so violent, rudderless. They were mistaken for seizures.
Shot coke in my neck.
The TV was talking to me.
Romantically, I am becoming the woman that I feared.
He said, there's going to be a second hunger strike.
Nothing's real.
And I'm going to die.
Sometimes I just go, hey, I can't deal.
Just beyond broken.
I'm out.
You have to, like, fantasize about the person I'm with.
I'm gonna stop it.
Fucking someone else.
It's okay to be different.
That I don't want to die is a miracle.
To be weird.
I'm so happy to be here.
I'm gonna help you one day. People are gonna love you for that.
It takes a lot of work to heal.
It's hard being a weird kid.
Sometimes you don't realize how fucked up something was until you feel the opposite of it.
You will just never see what you're not looking for.
I didn't know how to break up with him, so I just transferred schools.
I'm here with Alisa Kennedy Jones. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Yes, you are.
She is an author, a contributor to NPR, and a medical oddity. Her book is called Gotham Girl Interrupted. And you developed epilepsy at 40 years old.
Yeah.
And your book is about your struggles with that, but it's a humorous kind of...
take.
Yeah, a humorous take. And you don't withhold any details, no matter how embarrassing.
No. I mean, it's full of all kinds of feminine, grotesque moments that, yeah, I think anyone could relate to. Yeah. At this point, I really was writing it for an audience of people dealing with any kind of chronic condition, mm-hmm. be it epilepsy or anxiety, depression, Lyme's disease, chronic fatigue. There are a lot of us out there who are dealing with repeat kinds of conditions and states of being, and I needed to find some funny as I was coming to grips with what I was dealing with, which was intense.
You were raised in Northern California by some hippie parents, right? That's how you put it.
I don't know. I mean, they would be like, we weren't hippies. We were perfectly lovely. And, I guess they could be considered the original hipster types. They were very into the back to the land kind of thing, and they were nursing a lot of, you know, Prairie Home Companion or Little House on the Prairie, I would say, fantasies about subsistence and getting away from it all and whatnot. And that had some repercussions for my years growing up in terms of touching an electric fence at the age of 4. And
whoa, hold on. What? How did that come about?
I write about it in the book. We were looking at land. They were really making their break and their escape. And I was just a curious goofball little kid. And, that was pretty much my first brush with the electric, which I write about, and which I was saying hello to a horse, and I had no idea.
Whose fence was it?
We were with these people. I remember we were with the realtor, and she had this crazy toilet brush hair, bright red, and we were walking, and I was dawdling, and horses to me were always this kind of thing. They always looked frightened. I think it's the big eye thing or confused. And I think I was just trying to comfort the horse. And yeah, I rested my little finger on the fence. I had no idea what was coming. And you remember those shoes back in like the mid to late 70s, they were Buster Brown's.
Earth shoes?
Yeah, they were like wearing meatballs on your on your feet. They were laced up. I think they were Buster Brown's or something like that. So they were really intense. And I think they saved my life, actually, because I flew back.
Wow.
The current flew up my arm, and it was like unzipping my body from the inside out, and my shoes shot off.
Holy shit.
So that, when I did finally have my first experience with seizures, which essentially a seizure is for me, it's this overabundance of electricity and atypical electricity in one's brain. When I did have the first seizure, I was like, I recognize this.
Where's the horse?
Exactly. And my parents, of course, were like, what? Oh my gosh. And there, it was before 911 existed. And you would think people would be shocked and afraid, but they were like, are you all right? And I think they were doing that parent thing that we all do when for those of us who have kids, that you're like, you're all right, right?
Right.
You're all right.
We don't have to break up our day, do we?
We have not. Yeah. And so, there was a bit of that, but, that was pretty much my first brush with the electric, but I was a little spazzy, crazy kid. But I never had any sort of kind of epileptic moments early in life. It didn't happen until I was working as a film and a TV writer here in Los Angeles.
What was kind of the emotional temperature of your home life, and how did you feel in your skin and your views of yourself and the world and where you fit into it as a kid or adolescent? Any stories that you think are kind of emblematic of your inner life?
All of them? My inner life. My inner life is one of constant commentary. I would say, the kind of whirling in the opening of my book, I think there's a chapter called The Unbearable Brightness of Being. And it was, just that kind of whirling dervish electrical little kid who was always on the run and always had a comment and always full of sass and, yeah, I think my favorite singer was Jim Croce at the time, and so I would rock out to fucking...
Operator.
No, not Operator. It was Bad, Bad Leroy Brown. Yes.
It's a great song.
It's a great song.
I loved all of his songs.
But it was I think my parents were like, what have we done? Who is this person?
Were you comfortable in your skin, or was the being a whirling dervish kind of a way of not feeling any kind of sadness or pain or disconnect?
No, I wasn't. I was pretty comfortable. I think that's also what helped me later when I did come upon this unexpected kind of diagnosis after all these years of being healthy, was that I had a kind of naivete, like a naive point of view about epilepsy and about anything dealing with anxiety and mental health and depression or all of the things that I was like, oh, wait, this is something that I can't control. You're telling me I should be ashamed of it? Like, the stigma didn't even make sense to me.
Yeah.
So, no, I was a pretty free little, like, spirit. And I was I was like, I want to feel everything. I want to know all the things.
That's awesome. So you have always been a curious person.
I've been a total nerd.
Yeah.
And just like, and yes, I've touched the fence multiple times. That is a metaphor.
I think being curious is one of the biggest blessings you can have in life. It makes life so interesting.
Well, I do think I definitely would be, I would be lost without that kind of questioning, probing, seeking portion of my personality, I think, because... it's just, I want to know. I'm definitely a learner, and I was a hungry little girl and then teenager for experience, and then grown woman, and then mother for those sorts of things. And I used to tell my parents I wanted to have the FLE, the full life experience, and boy, did I get it.
So share, let's fast forward then to the day you had your first seizure.
So, yeah, the day I had my first seizure, it was, you know, just a kind of an ordinary day. I had zipped out to get some coffee, and I was driving back in our ridiculous car. We had bought this car. It was a 1985 Mercedes station wagon, and it's not a bougie kind of station wagon. It was a Lovecraft. It ran on taco oil. And so, I mean, you always smelled like a French fry or a taco after you drove it, but it was the dog car. So we were, I was driving back, and we were going to go to see Nanny McPhee, at the Television Academy. And I was in the kid, for the kids, it was like an exciting thing. And it, you know, the red carpet, dress up and whatnot. And so I was zipping back to the house, and then it was like, if you can imagine having two projectors, which we do in our heads, in our eyes, one film going forward at a very rapid pace, and then the other projector, the film reversing and rewinding in at a very slow pace.
Wow.
And that was, I was behind the wheel when that happened. I was on Lincoln Boulevard here, and I was like, oh my, and I was like, what Donnie Darko movie is this? I was just having, I was like, whoa, this does not feel right. And I'm like, okay. And slowing down and getting to the, I was like, all right, I can make it. I'm 10 feet from the house. I'm going to get there. And I just, and this is the part where my editor wants me to say, like, you melted into the floor or something like that. But that's not how seizures work for me. We were getting ready to go out the door. We were meeting people. They were expecting us. And that was a real blessing, in a way, because suddenly it wasn't the me melt. I wasn't melting into the floor. It was like the world tilted. And I don't know if you know, like, the original, it was like a black curtain kind of coming down, but in small, thin sort of strips and sheets. It's almost like that scene in Macbeth from the 1970s, I think, where he gets his head has been chopped off.
And you see it from his point of view.
Yes. Yeah. And so it was like the world just tilted and then went to black. And then it was the most beautiful thing that I have, I think, experienced in a way. And I don't mean to, I mean, epilepsy is it's a really debilitating, tough thing, complicated thing for 65 million people. And that's what people don't realize. There are 65 million people out there with epilepsy.
Globally or in the United States?
Globally.
Or, yeah.
And
wow.
Probably that number is a little low because there are so many people in developing nations who, you know, people who cannot access the kinds of anti-convulsant drugs and different types of treatments and surgeries that are going to be helpful to their conditions, or they're ostracized in ways because there's a lot of stigma and mythology built up around this condition. But for me, I just did a face plant in the kitchen before Nanny McPhee, and I woke up, obviously a really scary thing for my youngest daughter who was there. But, I woke up to the sense of, okay, there are people around me. There's a vague sense of navy blue authority in the middle distance. And, you know, they're asking you questions that are...
What's your name? Who's the president?
Yeah, who's the president? And I was, at that point, it wasn't so terrible. But now they always have the same, like, they say, Elisa, Elisa. Yeah. And then they're, who's the president? And I'm like, no. But at that point in time, I had no knowledge that anything had even happened. And I woke up... I think being in a kind of comatose or post-ictal state, you can hear people. They're like down the hallway. Mm-hmm. They feel like they're down the hallway. But I woke up to my girlfriend, Jacqueline, and she's got this velvety, velvety, fabulous voice. And she's a costume designer here, and she's just this incredible person. She never freaks out about anything. She's like, darling. And I'm in the CAT scan, I think, at this point, or I'm in something. I can't really see, but I see the outline of her. And she's like, darling, you've had a seizure. I was like, what's a seizure? What's that? I really had no, the word wasn't even in my vocabulary at this point. I'd been going to yoga and drinking wheatgrass juice and eating clean and doing all the things that you're supposed to do. And my brain had other plans, very different plans. So
describe what was beautiful about it.
So what was beautiful about it? It was like being trapped in a Van Gogh painting. And I remember, I have a vague memory of trying to tell my daughter that I'm having a lightning storm in my head. So it was the most incredible fireworks that I've ever seen. It was ecstatic. There was no pain. I think a lot of people, when you're watching someone have a seizure, there are over 40 different types of seizures. So you might see an absent seizure where it's very still, where it's very contained. You may see a seizure. The kinds of seizures that I have are the kinds that you see in the media commonly. They're convulsant, they're on the ground, they're very frightening, they're very traumatic for the people around me. And so it's been helpful to, I've had to really try to learn how to manage their mental health and help them manage. And say, you know what, this is just what happens. This is just the way that I'm wired. But I have to tell you, I'm not in pain. What the pain that happens is actually afterwards and waking up, and you might be dealing with an injury. You might be dealing, as I was dealing with, like cognitive delays and speech delays and executive function delay issues. I couldn't sequence things after I woke up from my first
for how long?
For about 3 to 4 weeks.
Wow.
And my words were off. So we would have all these ridiculous moments where, I would go to say, I would try to say the word garage and the word yard, garbage, garage would finally come. Or I would try to find a word to give an instruction, like, you know, to one of the kids to say, just put your glass in the, just make sure you put your glass in the thing that we put the dishes in. And they're like, you mean the sink? And I'd be like, that's not a word.
Really?
And they're like, Mom, I assure you, sink is a word. I'm like, pfft. And I'm gonna check you on that. But there were expressive issues and word retrieval. All of those things were happening, and I was like, "What the hell am I gonna do? Words are my living."
Yeah, and you had been diagnosed at that point.
No, I hadn't, because the diagnosis comes after. The diagnosis comes later. You may get sent to the ER with a seizure or with some sort of issue, neurological event like this, but you may not be diagnosed for several months. And for me, I was really shocked I was very thrown by this. It was very surprised. I mean, I looked like a prize fighter. I had black eyes. I'd cut my lip, and I was like, I needed to, and this is no pun intended, needed to get my brain around what had happened before I went down this path of like, okay, because to me, a seizure signaled something very wrong, very bad. It was either something very mundane or very bad. So I should correct myself there. Either I didn't have enough water and I was doing too much yoga or whatever, or I had a brain tumor, something really frightening. There was something amiss. And I couldn't quite go there in that time where my words were off and things were still amiss. And so denial was my first strategy.
When you went out and the people around you witnessed you convulsing, That didn't kind of...
There were no adults in the room.
Oh, there weren't. Oh.
I'm a single mother. Or I was. I am. Oh, yeah. Okay. At that point, I was very much a single mother on the West Coast.
Okay.
And no, there was only a child trying to figure out what to do and how to, and who'd never seen her mother in this kind of position ever before. And so the trauma for her, the fallout for her was very significant, I think.
Okay. And I apologized to Elisa when she came in the door because I hadn't gotten, I thought I had received a copy of your book. And a lot of times before a guest comes, I will spot read, get a sense of the book because I cannot keep up with.
No, your reading list is insane.
It's insane. And I don't want to get burned out doing this job, but enough about me. If to the person listening, I just want to let you know that I haven't read her book. So in the beginning, I was like, yeah, she wrote this funny book about this and that.
So it does get funny, guys.
Yes. Yeah.
It does. But initially, it was not funny. Initially, it was, oh, no. Oh, this is terrible. And of course, all I wanted was Ina Garten and to like roll up in. And I had to, what I noticed as I was trying to come out of that first seizure was the more I did with my hands, the more my words came back. And the more and the more that my sequencing abilities of like putting things in order, because I couldn't put my clothes on right.
Really?
I noticed that I was just a bit off. And they were like, you need to follow up with a neurologist. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to follow up with a neurologist. And really, truly, I needed to follow up with not a neurologist necessarily, but, well, a neurologist and an epileptologist. And that's the one thing, like a neurologist, that neurologists can specialize in so many different types of things, whether it's MS or Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. There are so many, if you have any idea or inkling that you're going down a path of epilepsy, it really makes sense to get with someone who specializes in that. And I didn't know any of that at all because, again, I was like, what's a seizure?
So give us some moments from your ups and downs with this.
Well, the biggest, I mean, some wonderful things have been the community of people who have stepped up for me in this kind of years, because there was a time when I started having seizures where, you know, there were adults in the room and they were there to catch me. And there were people who were looking out for me in ways that I couldn't look out for myself, especially if I was on the ground. But there was a stretch. I mean, I think a really hard moment in time was the actual diagnosis day, because I had put it off, but I knew things weren't right. I knew
it was more than low potassium.
Yes, it was more than low potassium, Nora. Oh, yeah, it wasn't that. I am the overly tall girl who probably would faint at a certain point in time. But
she's referencing Nora McInerney from recent episode.
Yeah, but I was concussed, and, like Nora, and but the. The day of, I couldn't imagine that given the way that we were living our lives and the kind of, you know, I had embraced a kind of healthy lifestyle. I wasn't ready for the kind of callous diagnosis that I got, which, you know, I was with the guy in the little room having the EEG with my head wrapped up like Madeline Kahn in Young Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. I had just this a crazy hair and mummy style bandage. I looked like a giant fucking tampon in that moment. But I was like, we have to take pictures. And so I was, you know, with the technician. I was like, can you just snap one? Because my kids are totally going to laugh at this. And I was trying to be as upbeat as possible. And I wasn't at all prepared for the kind of diagnosis of the guy coming in and him having 5 minutes, the neurologist, and saying, does anyone in your family have epilepsy? And looking at him going, no, not at all. And he's, because you do. And
wow, what a dick.
I know. And you're thinking at this point, this is the moment where the the Oliver Sacks doctor leans forward and puts his hand on yours, and I just lost it. I was like, you're fucking kidding me. And then I really, really lost it, because all I could see in that moment was like dying on repeat over and over again, and having hundreds of the, you know, because I apparently I was having hundreds of subclinical seizures a day.
What?
And I had no idea that this was even a thing for me or for our family or for anything.
Does the original seizure get residuals for each of those little ones?
So, I wish. God, I wish.
When you say you totally lost it, what do you mean?
Well,
did you yell at him, or you cried, or internally you just died, or what?
Internally, I died. Yeah. It was every worst fear.
Like, this is a death sentence I've just been given.
Yeah, but it's a living death sentence where right. I get to do it over and over and over again. Right. And I don't want to live that kind of life. I don't want that. And it wasn't, I was like, I guess I expected if I was going to get that kind of delivery or diagnosis, I would expect someone to say, hey, there's a lot that we can do. And by the way, we've got a whole dream team here of people who can totally help you. But just him telling me that I was going to have seizures or that I had epilepsy was about to give me another seizure right there in the room. Yeah. Because I was like, were you absent on the day that they taught bedside manner? I mean, what do you think your medical orthodoxy, whatever your surgeon's I've held a brain in my hand kind of thing excuses you or gives you permission to? I'm not a sick person.
Yeah.
And I think I was, you know, I was like, ah! So there was a bit of that.
When I was 11 years old, I had a doctor just very offhandedly say, and I don't think he even addressed me. I think he said it to my mom. He will never be able to have children. And then, and I just remember almost kind of like leaving, you know, my body kind of just like electricity kind of went through it. Because mm-hmm. even though I didn't, at 11, you don't give a shit about having kids, but you know that it's a big part of quote unquote normal people's lives.
Yeah.
And apparently my mom told me later that she took him out in the hallway and tore him a new asshole.
Good.
But it's really jaw-dropping the lack of tact and compassion some people can have. If you could go back and be that doctor that talked to you instead of him, what would you have said?
Hey, I write about this because I was like, now you're expecting that this is a part where the doctor leans forward and says, okay, so we're looking at epilepsy here as a possibility and as a thing, and we need to rule out a couple of other things. We need to have this conversation because this is important. There's a lot we can do, and there's a whole team here and that can help you have an amazing, funny, beautiful life that isn't necessarily full of repeat episodes. We're going to help you. We're going to help you get control of your seizures. Science is here to end epilepsy. We're here for you. Like, just show. He could have just shown up in that moment. Just a little more. I would show up for that patient and say, you can still have every possible rom-commy, ridiculously funny, amazing life experience. It's okay. It's going to be okay.
You're going to meet the man of your dreams when he rushes up to you and cleans the poop out of your pants in the middle of the street.
Oh, my God. Oh, I didn't know that the, you know, I'd be woken up 3 or 5 years later in the grocery store and it would be Milo Ventimiglia over standing over me, which is essentially what happened later. So that's the upside. No, it wasn't Milo himself, but yes. It was the EMG.
I don't know who Milo is.
Oh, he's the guy from This Is Us. He's a very handsome, handsome actor. And so I woke up years later, a few years later in the grocery store to the most, and this is New York City now, and this, if you live in New York City or you know New York City, this is going to happen to you at some point in life. You're going to wake up to something, some beautiful person. And in his case, he had this incredible hair, and I just was thinking, I was like, oh no, it's happened again. Of course, I've had a seizure, and I had before that been having one of my most perfect, epic moment, Mary Tyler Moore throws her hat in the air moments. But as I'm in there and lying on the ground in the grocery store, I'm looking at him, taking this guy in, his incredible hair, his shirt. I see the little medical cross thingy, and I'm like, oh, okay. I'm looking at him, and I'm seeing like, oh, that's a lot of blood. Oh man, that's like a Walking Dead amount of blood. And then I'm looking at him again. I'm like, I'm seeing some pinkish gray. And I'm like, oh my God, did I just get brain on Milo Ventimiglia? Did I just get brain on Jack from This Is Us? I mean, I'm just looking at this guy and I'm like, oh, that sucks. I need my brain in my head right now. And that's the other thing. It's like, the anxiety of epilepsy is another thing that if I were a doctor, I would talk to people about, because you're walking around and when you're first diagnosed, you're like, I have a fucking taser in my head. Oh my God. Oh no, don't tase me, bro. Because that's the other thing. If you're having a seizure in public and you're well dressed, it's perceived very differently than if you've gone to the, you know, the bodega on the corner in your sweats. It's like, oh, she must be a junkie or something like, no, I'm not a junk. I'm not. I'm a spaz. No. I'm just a spazzy girl and I have epilepsy. And so, yeah, I've woken up in all kinds of situations. I was at a writer's retreat and I had a seizure and I woke up to this aging hippie in a Muppet sweater. She looked just like the woman who hangs out with Animal on the Muppet Show. She's blonde. I think her name is Janice or something. Mm-hmm. And she was like, dude, you seriously need some weed. And I just am like, oh, I probably do, but I'm a mother. There's a lot of complexity in dealing with this type of condition, but there's a lot of complexity in dealing with a lot of life.
Yes.
And a lot of chronic conditions.
Yeah. And almost everyone, like I'm putting a nauseatingly silver lining cloud spin on it, but almost everything is an opportunity to be more compassionate towards yourself.
Yeah, but we're all full of self-loathing and stuff, and so it's hard.
Why do you got to bring out the hitch?
We're so good at hating on ourselves.
Oh my God, if we talked to somebody the way we talk to ourselves, they would file for a restraining order.
Yes, they would. I'm like, I'm totally harassing myself about everything. I'm like, and I love that line of like, I can't even talk shit about myself correctly. I think that's in one of your podcasts. It's hilarious. Yes. But like, I can't even do that right.
Somebody filled out a survey the other day and this woman was sharing about how her husband loves her body, but she hates her body. And she used the phrase, I'm not my type. That is a t-shirt.
That is a t-shirt. That's how I felt after, because I woke up from the seizure with the handsome guy, the handsome EMT, and I'd broken my face in 15 places, 15 or 16 places. I know I had broken both sides of my face and had my jaw dislocated off and broken all of my teeth.
Oh my God.
It was rough. It was.
This was in the grocery store?
Yes.
What did you hit?
I hit the shelf. I don't know. I wasn't there for it. I just know that I was reaching down. I was trying. It was a good day. I was feeling rocking, really, you know, and I was trying to do like Susie Orman told me and life. And I was buying the cheap coffee. So I was reaching for the cheap Martinson. I wasn't going to Starbucks that day. Mm-hmm. And I totally bit the dust. And I had such an intense seizure. And it you know, I didn't.
What caused the damage, the falling or the seizure?
I think the seizure because, and I learned this, I don't know where I learned it from, but it takes 500 pounds of force, so mass times acceleration, to really crack and fracture the human skull. And I did it on both sides. And I'm kind of a skinny, mini little girl in a way, tall girl, but olive oil. And I don't know how I did it, but I did it. And I did it face first, big time. And so
wow.
I didn't know the extent of my injuries when the EMT guy was there, but that odyssey, that sort of, that's when I started really, I was in 13 hours of surgery and I...
Was there actual brain, or was that you just
I don't know if there was actual brain. That's where you could see where my chin has broke through my jawbone broke through my chin, yes. Like right there. And this was a prosthetic jaw right here on my left side for a long time because I'd shattered this side entirely.
And this happened in 2015?
2015.
And you've had six surgeries
later.
And
I severed all the nerves, so they
in your face.
Yeah, on this side of my face, so I'm a little strokey. Yeah. But it's not the end of the world, but what it has meant, and I remember writing it down before they took me into surgery, I'm like, am I ever going to be able to feel anything again, like a kiss? Because I couldn't talk at that point at all. Obviously, I wasn't talking.
Your jaw was wired shut.
I wasn't wired shut because they can't do that until after the surgery. I just couldn't speak at all. It was too painful, and I was looped. But it was, am I ever going to feel? Because I feel like this was my whole, my mouth. I am such a mouthy, sassy girl, and I'd been writing this blog in New York about New York weirdos and neurodiversity and everyone and how it's the neurodiversity capital of the world. And suddenly I was the weirdest girl in New York at that point in time. And my whole center of being has been in my mouth. It's the road to hell and the road to everything else about me. So I was really thrown by what was happening and the idea that I wouldn't be able to speak or that, you know, things were permanently, that I was going to be permanently disfigured was frightening. I mean, even in that bleary-eyed kind of what's just happened state. Oh, no. Because right as we got to the hospital, the handsome EMT guy, I thought he was going to, he was leaning down to me, and I was like, oh, he's so handsome. I wish he would just kiss me. And I could see this kind of reverse gravity like he on him, like his chest just weighing him down. And he's looking at me, and he's just so sad. And he's trying to put a good spin on things, I think. And he's like, so, you know, you're going to be okay. There are things they can do. There are prosthetics and implants and things. And I'm looking at him going, prosthetics? Prosthetic what? And I was like, oh, this is not going to be good.
Easy, yeah.
Yeah, easy. And it hasn't been because it was... Yeah, what it was. No talking. A lot of ridiculous situations because New York City is a city of reaction, a city of people who yell, who scream, great pontificators. Everyone has an opinion. And when you can't voice any opinion at all, suddenly everybody's giving it to you in all kinds of ways and shapes and forms.
Wow.
So Mutant Manhattan was the next couple of years.
So where are you today? And what have you, if anything, taken from it? What do you have to share with somebody like me who has no experience with it, doesn't have a loved one? So I don't know. And if somebody out there has a loved one or a friend, or should they become somebody who has it?
What would you like to serious. I mean, I would go back. I would echo again. Like, there are 65 million people with epilepsy. No one's talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I got tired of tiptoeing around it at work, in my personal life. With the kids, obviously, I wanted to life is beautiful the fuck out of things, because I didn't want them to have a terrible life because their mom was, you know, having seizures. And mm-hmm. what I want for people is to not be afraid to talk about, to address the elephant in 65 million rooms. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, if you're with someone who is, chances are you do know someone who has epilepsy, and they may not be talking about it, or they've encountered something along the lines in their lifetime. But I mean, I guess one of my biggest takeaways was summed up pretty wonderfully yesterday. I wish I'd written it, but I didn't. It was like, sometimes you have to break everything to break through. And I think one of the things also that, like, the moment you think you're the person you're supposed to be, that's when the world comes in, or the universe comes in, whatever you believe. And I've had a lot of, like, challenges to my faith, I'd say. But the world comes in to force you to change just a little or a lot and be something new. And that is science, that nature abhors the vacuum. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, just when you think you're who you're supposed to be, something's going to, which I know a lot of people can say, like, oh, the moment I get hopeful about something, it's dashed. But I don't think it's such a bad thing for change to come, even in its forms. And I would definitely agree with the woman who wrote the other day. I'm like, after I saw my face for the first time coming home, I had to do a lot of grief work around the face that I had before and the face that I had now, because it's a different face. People in my building were like, do you live here?
Really?
Yes. I was very, very misshapen for a long time. And it was, I was suddenly not my own type. I was no longer my own type. I was like, oh, oh. And you know you're getting better when you've had a huge accident, when kids aren't afraid of you. But I mean, when you go out in public in the city, I mean, fortunately, New York is full of freaks. And so everybody's, you know, they're very forgiving there.
Yeah.
But I, for at least a good 2 years, was very swollen and shifted to, like, my whole face had shifted to the left side of my head. I took a lot of pictures to try to track mm-hmm. my progress, but also I took a lot of photos with like Maurice Sendak creatures and where the wild things are. And I was trying to go with, like, here's what it is. This is what mm-hmm. it looks like now. I wasn't always good at doing that.
Yeah. I'm having a bad symmetry day.
I'm having a really bad symmetry day. And I did have some magical moments where I was having a fucked up, I am so asymmetrical, I am never going to go on a date ever again in my life. I'm never going to, who is going to love me at this monstrous phase of my existence? And I walked into a Sephora on Broadway, and I was like, I need to learn how to fucking do my makeup all over again, and you're going to help me. And I was very, and she was like, girl, okay. And she was like, we are going to work on your symmetry, because I had to relearn not just how to talk and not just how to, like, eat, and because I couldn't eat for so long. I could only eat through a straw. And now straws are banned. And so
straws are banned?
Apparently they are. I guess in California. I don't know. I've been everywhere in California this last week. Like I was saying, and like I was in Sacramento and it's the Midwest of California and I couldn't swear at all. Now I'm in LA and
fuck.
Yeah, fuck. But
so you had to eat through a straw for
oh my God,
a while.
I got so hungry for a long time after each surgery. So, because your wires shut again, and it's like,
I can't imagine.
But I tried to like grind. I was like, I ordered a hamburger from the place around the corner, and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna put this in the blender. I'm gonna try to get it up a straw. There was no. I was like, I'm so hungry, and broth and Jell-O is not gonna do it. And yeah, I wanted anything. Like, say it with beef. I'm like, please just let me, somebody come over to my house and eat a hamburger and let me just smell it. But
so
yeah.
How effective were you on anti?
I was on anti-convulsants, anti-epileptic drugs at the time that I had the seizure and had a breakthrough seizure. So they didn't work. So this is the thing, like your body can shift and change over the years and metabolically, mm-hmm. we change all the time throughout the day, and it just so happened that the drug that I was on stopped working, and our bodies are very good at tricking tricking the drugs I've found over the years, at least mine. Mm-hmm. I tend to have like a cycle of like it seems like 2 years where a drug will work. I've never been able to stay seizure free for more than 2.5 years. And it means no driving, no taking a shower alone, which can be a good thing, but no swimming, no this. There are suddenly all these rules in your life. So yeah, there's a lot to know. So telling someone who has no experience of epilepsy, I would say, oh my God, just don't, if you're a parent and you've got a child in your child's class, say who is dealing with something on the spectrum of neurodiversity, of whether it's autism or epilepsy, don't be afraid to ask all the questions, because most of the time people will tell you and say, you know, it's just this and I have to take this drug, and don't not invite them over to sleepovers. And if you're a mother, you know, suddenly, because it can be like some of the invitations stop coming because people are freaked out by it. Mm-hmm. It has a history of all kinds of mythology of, you know, the person's possessed by demons. The person is, you know, has issues with addiction. And that's, you know, everyone's got something.
Yeah.
So.
And so.
Include.
What are the ways, other than, you know, asking questions, inviting somebody over? Let's say your friend is going, you're going out on the town with a friend. What should that friend know in the event something happens? Or what are some things, other than the ones you've listed, that you are to avoid? Like,
so I know my triggers pretty well. And I...
So
my
environment
triggers...
can influence these?
So environment can. I'm very photosensitive, so I just don't go to those movies that have the warnings, and I do think they're important because I'm pretty photosensitive, meaning any strobe light, I'm not going to go to a club. Okay. I mean, at this point in time, if I am going to go to something that's a lot of flashing, or if I am going to an event that's like red carpety and there's a lot, I'm careful when I take the sunglasses and I avoid anything that's going to make me start feeling like I'm going down a seizure-y path. I have a chapter in the book because if I'm feeling like I'm going to have a seizure, sleep is another trigger for me. So if I haven't had a lot of sleep, or I've been traveling and I've been on the road and I'm dehydrated and I'm feeling like, you know, off at all, I'm probably, and this is not to dehumanize at all, but I'm going to werewolf myself, which is essentially...
You're going to
like,
do what?
I'm going to werewolf myself.
Oh,
I'm
right.
Put myself in, like, I'm going to put baby in the corner. I'm going to the soft space because, and there are a lot of sharp edges in life and I don't need any more of them. And so if I'm feeling like I'm vulnerable to a seizure, I'm going to say, you know what?
I can't go.
I gotta stay home. I gotta sit this one out. I'm
going to be in the bed. I'm going to be near the couch if I feel like an aura, because I usually have auras before I have, and that's that hallucination or sense mm-hmm. of something coming, like with people with migraines. Mm-hmm. Then I'm gonna sit it out. I'm gonna manage my triggers. Like stress is a trigger, lack of sleep. You do want to limit alcohol.
Hunger, I would imagine.
Hunger can be a thing, but...
I'm just guessing. I'm not...
Hunger can be a thing. Everyone's triggers are different. And so if you're diagnosed with epilepsy, you're going to get to... That's the other thing I would have said to myself years ago when I was diagnosed. Was like, you're going to get to know this beast. And it's a beast, for sure. And we need to end it. There are a lot of people dealing with this, and there's a lot of science that's and progress in terms of different treatments, and whether it's CBD and a Pedialex for different types of seizures, whether it's the kind of drugs that I take. Yeah, so the person who is dealing with epilepsy and their family probably knows their triggers pretty well, and they're going to be like, you know what, I gotta manage these. And at a certain point, you start to really take your epilepsy seriously. I've watched people and good friends who have epilepsy who didn't take it seriously for a long time. And then they're like, I got to 30 and I was thinking about having children and I'm changing. It's like any adulting that we end up doing in life, and I'm still learning how to be a grown-up, but it's something like I'm generally putting myself to bed pretty early because that's my jam right now.
If one is in a situation where somebody is having a convulsive seizure, what should we do, if anything?
So, I mean, first stick a dirty sponge in their mouth. No, you're not going to do anything. Yeah. You're not going to do anything along the lines. You're going to, they used to say put a spoon in someone's mouth. They used to say terrible, you know, you don't want to do anything like that because no one's going to swallow their tongue. You might bite your tongue. I've done that myself a few times. But you're generally going to stay with them. And turn them on their side. There's a kind of stay, make sure their head's protected because that's a thing that can really, that's the really dangerous bit. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to want to slip something soft under their head. You're going to turn them on their side in case they aspirate, in case they, you know, have a moment. And because you want to keep them breathing, and you're going to time the seizure. You're going to stay with them, and you're going to time, because over 5 minutes, or if you feel like they're not breathing, you're going to want to call 911. I mean, everyone's seizures are very different. Mm-hmm. I've got one friend who has absent seizures, and so she'll still text during a seizure.
What?
Yes. So you think the brain is weird, but the brain with 100 billion cells is weirder than you can even think. That's what this is. So she's like, she's had situations where the person's been like, you hugged me. And she's like, oh, I don't know that. I didn't do that. And she's like, but she'll be like, I'm really glad I hugged that person and not that other person at work because that guy's a douche. So there are absent seizures where the person, you may think that they're right there with you, and they are not there with you. Mm-hmm. And there are convulsive seizures. But the tonic-clonics that I have, again, I'm concerned about turn on the side, keeping the head safe, timing things, because again, over 5 minutes, you generally want to check in with the doc.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. The best of luck with your book. I know it's kicking ass. It was at the top of the new releases on Amazon.
It was, and James Patterson gave me a blurb, which was pretty kick ass. He's been an amazing supporter, and all of his team have been incredible. And now, I mean, I think if I were to sum up the book, I'd say it's sort of like the Gilmore Girls meets epilepsy. So there's a lot, and Tina Fey, like someone, like it's meant to be, we need some mainstream voices to kind of get out there and say, hey,
It's not a death sentence.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if people want to follow you on social media, Gotham Girl.
Oh yeah, I am Gotham Girl. I'm mostly on Twitter, and I talk to everybody. So just know that I'll talk back to you.
Okay.
I am Gotham Girl. The blog is pretty. I keep it pretty up to date. And okay. ElisaJones.com.
Cool. We'll put links to all your stuff under the show notes.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Elisa. I learned a lot. I would have never imagined that some people can experience a beautiful side during a seizure. So much I learned on this podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Calm. If you guys deal with stress or sleeplessness, Calm is an awesome app for sleep and relaxation. It's a number one app. And it can really transform your nights, which means better days. I should clarify, it's the number one app for sleep and relaxation. We all know that the number one app overall is Smell My Feet. Check out Sleep Stories, which are like bedtime stories for adults. They can help you fall into a deep, natural sleep in minutes. And they're narrated by awesome voices like Nick Offerman and LeVar Burton. And if you go to calm.com/mental, you can get 25% off a Calm premium subscription. It includes hundreds of sleep stories and tons of other content like really cool, soothing music from artists like Sam Smith, guided meditations, breathing exercises, and so much more. Over 60 million people use Calm. Join them today and get the sleep you need tonight. For a limited time, you guys can get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/mental, and it comes with unlimited access to Calm's entire library, and new content is added every week. So get started today at calm.com/mental. That's calm.com/mental. And as I mentioned early on in the podcast, we're sponsored by Squarespace. Turn your dream into a reality with Squarespace. They make it easier than ever to launch your passion project. I created a website for dog pictures that I've taken. I used to be obsessed with it. I've probably taken 10,000 dog pictures in my life and snippets of the music that I write and play. And it was super simple putting a website together to put that stuff on there. It took me maybe an hour and a half. And so whether you're looking to start a new business, and the website, if you want to check that out, is paul-gilmartin.squarespace.com. And whether you... Or is it Paul Gilmartin hyphen Squarespace? I don't know. Maybe I'll put the link to that on the show notes for this. Whether you're looking to start a new business or showcase your work, publish content, sell products, and more, Squarespace is the tool for you. Their templates are beautiful, easy to use. You can do it in a couple of clicks. They have a really powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online, and analytics to help grow your site in real time. And everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. Nothing to patch or upgrade ever. Buying domains is super simple, and you get the help you need with Squarespace's 24/7 award-winning customer support. Squarespace empowers millions of people, from designers to lawyers, artists to gamers, even restaurants and gyms, to turn great ideas into something real. So head to squarespace.com/mental for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code MENTAL to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com, offer code MENTAL. Do you like that dramatic pause right before offer code MENTAL? I like to create tension. Let's get to some surveys. This is... and by the way, if you are a monthly donor or considering becoming a monthly donor, which is really, really essential to keeping this show alive, and we can always use more monthly donors, you can become a monthly donor or a one-time donor through PayPal, and you can become a monthly donor through Patreon. And I would suggest Patreon, number one, because I'm not a huge fan of PayPal, and I do much prefer Patreon. Through Patreon, it's much easier when I do a raffle of some woodworking project that I've made. It's much easier to correspond with me and send me your guesses for the raffle. And I will have a cutting board coming up very soon. And I might even, I have some wood from a tree of mine that fell down, and I'm in the process of making some coffee tables with that. And maybe I'll raffle one of those off coming up. But anyway, if you go to patreon.com/mentalpod, you can become a monthly donor for as little as a dollar a month. I think to, not I think, but to enter into the raffle, it starts at $5 a month. And for every $5 a month you are a donor, that's how many guesses you get. This is a shame and secret survey filled out by a woman who calls herself Pizza Crumbs from the mental breakdown last night. She identifies as asexual. She's 18. She was raised in a totally chaotic environment. Ever been the victim of sexual abuse? Some stuff happened, but I don't know if it counts. My mom bathed me up until I was around 12. Yes, that is sexual abuse. And if Child Protective Services had heard about that, they would have removed you from the home or put your mom in jail or something. It was only when we moved to a place that had a lock on the bathroom door. By the way, if you have a parent that doesn't allow you to have a lock on the bathroom door, that's super fucked up, and that is a huge, huge red flag. Before, I wouldn't shower in weeks or wear my swimming costume while showering in case she came in and made comments about my body. I told her I was really uncomfortable with it and asked her to leave me be, but she, for some reason, thought I needed her guidance. It is so sick. I don't think she had any bad intentions with it. No, that's, let's put it this way. It's sick. There was nothing innocent about what your mom was doing. And it doesn't matter what her intention was. What matters is how you felt about it and healing the damage that it did. I don't think she had any bad intentions with it, but I reckon it kind of fucked me up. I always felt weird around my dad. It's fucking gross, but he'd kiss me like someone would kiss their partner. Oh my God, I'm so sorry that you were unsafe with both your parents and they both sexualized you. And while he never actually touched me, he'd get uncomfortably close. You don't have to actually touch a child for it to be sexual abuse. She's been emotionally abused, and then some of the abuse, she's not sure if it counts as emotional abuse. Some of my earliest memories with my dad are him not talking to me for days and even weeks straight for the slightest thing that made him angry. One day, I must have been about 8, he came back from work and I made cookies with my mom, so I thought I'd offer him some, and I just remember him throwing the plate on the table and proceeding to remind me what I'd done the previous day. He didn't talk to me for 3 days. I can't remember what I did, but it always hurt me when he did that. I never felt safe around him or even him being alone with my mom. He had a cricket bat. He would bang threateningly against the table while he and my mom would argue, and I would always sit right outside the door because I was so terrified he'd hit her. Mom used to slap me when I was younger, and it never used to bother me until it turned into aggressive spanking and verbal abuse because of her broken marriage and fucked mental health. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Positive experiences with the abusers. My dad and I get along sometimes, mostly when we talk about sports. Ironically, cricket. And I love my mom, but she's tough work, man. Darkest thoughts. I sometimes imagine just catching a train anywhere, far away, blowing all my money on drugs and things that make me happy, then going home, beating the shit out of my dad, then flying to another country without telling anyone, and killing myself is the grand finale. Darkest secrets, I don't have any. Sexual fantasies most powerful to you. Incest porn, usually between father and daughter. I've been addicted to porn since the age of 12. It haunts me and I don't know why. It's weird and I feel so wrong. Well, you know, there is a correlation between being addicted to porn or sexually acting out and having your needs not met as a kid and being sexualized by caregivers. For many of us, it was the way that we learned to soothe. It was our first drug. And when children are sexualized, it greatly increases the chances of them experiencing addictions, depression, anxiety, fear of intimacy. What, if anything, would you like to say to someone you haven't been able to? To my mom, I wish you weren't so selfish sometimes. Thanks for choosing my abusive brother over me. I get that he's the handsome, tall, smart Romeo in this house, but I also exist. Also, for staying with your stupid husband and my dickhead father. For him, you ruined my life. What, if anything, do you wish for? To forget my past, to either die or leave home and not have to worry about the consequences or the drama I'll have to deal with. You know, it is much easier to kill parts of your life than to kill yourself. Or I should say, it makes more sense to kill off parts of your life, the toxic ones. Listen to your body. You know, our bodies are usually telling us some kind of important information. And, you know, once we do protect ourselves and create a life that we don't feel cornered by, then we get to experience freedom and autonomy and sticking up for ourselves. And then the ability to trust again and then form intimate relationships. And I'm getting to experience that. It took a lot of work to get here, but it's so worth it. And I'm so glad that I didn't kill myself when I was obsessing about it 16, 17 years ago. Have you shared these things with others? No, all my friends are just as fucked up as I am, as you can imagine. I don't want to pester them. You know, it depends on the friend, but I don't think that's pestering somebody. I think you are giving somebody else the opportunity to open up to you, and they might not. They might be uncomfortable with a conversation about things that aren't surface level, but it's worth a try. And I encourage you to just start out with little bits of information and just kind of, you know, look, you know, do they respond in kind? Do they listen? And if not, and don't open up about anything more. But if they do, then, you know, just kind of gradually go. How do you feel after writing these things down? Better, actually. I just had an argument with my dad, and I really, really felt like exposing him. Anything you'd like to share with someone who shares your thoughts or experiences? If you can, get the heck away. Amen. A fucking men. This is a happy moment survey filled out by a woman who calls herself Fuckhead Johnson. You know, your parents did think long and hard before they named you Fuckhead. The nurses in the maternity ward begged your parents not to do it. That's all I have for that riff. Her happy moment: when the fog is lifted from my major depressive episode, and then parentheses, severe and recurrent, and I have the energy and desire to just take care of myself, I go through my routines with ease. I sing in the car to my favorite music. Even though I know the other shoe will drop eventually, I'm thankful for this window of time to be my authentic self. I try to breathe in gratitude and exhale compassion. I'm determined to be thankful for my silly little life on this speck in the universe. I'm determined to stay hopeful because one day, just one day, maybe these good days will outnumber the hard days. That's so awesome. Any comments to make the podcast better? It would be cool if we could upload pics related to our survey results. Not sure how that would work exactly, but just so you could see a glimpse into other people's worlds. You can't do that on the surveys themselves, but what you could do is you could go into the forum and you could post pictures there. There are threads related to the surveys, I believe. I know there's a thread related to the podcast, and so under a specific podcast, you could, I assume that you are wanting, I wonder if you're wanting to upload pics related to survey results that were read or just your survey results in general. Yeah, I think in the forum you might be able to do something related to that. And you can see other people's survey results. When you go to the website and you click on surveys, you'll have an option for each survey to either take it out, fill it out, or see the results of other people's. And you'll want to click on see individual responses when you're looking to see what people responded to on the surveys. Otherwise, it'll just give you, you know, statistical information like the average age of somebody filling it out. This is an awfulsome moment filled out by a woman who calls herself feeling nauseous. She writes, and for those of you that are new to the podcast, awfulsome is a combination of something that was awful and then in hindsight looking at it and there's something kind of awesomely fucked up, darkly funny about it. And she writes, I'm an assistant to the supervisor and I was unfortunately placed in the awkward slash awful position of hiring my cousin who is about 5 years older than me. This cousin has coerced me to periodically perform sexual favors for him while I was between the ages of 4 and 13. If it wasn't for the fact that we were desperate for help, we wouldn't have been considered for the job because we're related. And because the supervisor knew him, I didn't feel like there was much I could do to stop him from getting hired without having to admit what my cousin did to me. And I would, you know, instead of saying admit, I would say disclose, because admit kind of infers that you were somehow guilty for what he did to you. You know, when you're between 4 and 13 and somebody is 5 years older than you, that is abuse. That is not something that you should be blaming yourself for. Being forced to interact with him daily has been extremely difficult because all of the memories that I had managed to shove down and forget have resurfaced. Now I have to deal with all of the awful feelings of guilt and self-disgust all over again. And worst of all, occasionally he will look at me in such a way that it makes me feel like if he could have his way, he would totally fuck me, and it makes me feel sick to my stomach. However, I may not have too much longer before his ineptitude will get him fired and I will be free of ever interacting with him again. He just got his second strike out of three in less than 2 weeks. And I would imagine she filled this out about a month ago. And I'm going to bet that he is gone by now. I hope. Sending you some love. This is a shame and secret survey filled out by a guy who calls himself the guy hiding in the woods. He is straight in his 20s, was raised in a pretty dysfunctional environment. Never been sexually abused, not sure if he's been emotionally abused. The more and more I work in therapy, I realize how my mom twists and fucks with my life. Any positive experiences with the abusers? I love my mom very deeply. I'm always the first one she calls and I always respond. That sounds like a red flag for maybe enmeshment. You know, a parent reaching out to a child for emotional support for the parent is not healthy. It is not healthy. And it's usually a sign that there was a reversal of needs being met in childhood, that the child was kind of groomed into meeting the parent's emotional needs rather than the healthy way of the parent being there for the kid. Darkest thoughts. Every time I'm in a large crowd, I look around and wonder who in the crowd will be the first to die. I always hope that it is me. Darkest secrets. I got myself in debt because I was planning my suicide. Sexual fantasies most powerful to you. For a woman to really crave me. What, if anything, would you like to say to someone you haven't been able to? To tell my parents how in debt I am because I think it would help me recover. What, if anything, do you wish for? I wish my dog and I could go out in the woods and be left alone. Have you shared these things with others? No, my parents already think I'm becoming the Unabomber from how much time I spend up at our cabin alone. How do you feel after writing these things down? It's nice to type it out, though I'm still just tired. Thank you, buddy, for sharing all of that. And, you know, this reminds me a lot of ways of the other survey I read, where I talked about having a life where we feel cornered, and then the option that makes the most sense to us is, you know, killing ourselves or hiding away from everybody rather than distancing ourselves from the people who are unhealthy for us, and then finding out what a healthy relationship looks like and relearning how to trust with healthy people. And then we get to feel that awesome feeling of having a life that we don't feel cornered by. This is a love filled out by a woman who calls herself Clementines. And she writes, I love that my partner holds my hand when we watch TV every night. It's been 3 years and he still grabs my hand. I love the warmth and how perfect our fingers interlace. No matter what type of day I've had, it always calms me. I hope he does it for the rest of our days. It's beautiful. Thank you. This is a shame and secret survey filled out by an agender person who calls themselves Sanity Curious. They identify as gay. They're 20. They were raised in a pretty dysfunctional environment. They've never been sexually abused, but they've been emotionally abused. They write, my ex-girlfriend grew up in an extremely emotionally abusive household. Her mother was an untreated alcoholic who regularly abused, manipulated, and threatened her children. She would frequently steal money from my then-girlfriend to buy alcohol. During the second year of our relationship, my ex moved into my studio apartment and became more or less financially dependent on me. In parentheses, I fed us both, helped pay for her voice lessons, etc. I feel she began to resent me like a child would resent a parent. The power was unbalanced and she lashed out. The relationship was littered with threats of suicide, harsh ultimatums, and a sense of doom and despair on both ends. By the way, if you're ever in a relationship with somebody and they threaten suicide, if you break up with them, break up with them. It is a sign that that person really, really needs help. And it is not up to you to find them help. They are responsible for their own happiness and their own destiny, you know? You could research ways for them to find help and hand it to them and say, you know, this is where you can get help. But this is not healthy for me to be in this relationship. Or go and start getting professional help. But trying to change that person, if somebody is threatening suicide, if you break up, their problems are running so deep that trying to change them or make them see something is its own form of insanity. She also had what I can only describe as 1.5 diluted pseudo-affairs, which I forgave but still make me feel sick to my stomach and unclean whenever I think of them. I suffered both at the hands of her and her mother, and I'm afraid she sometimes suffered at my hands as well. We were children, 16 and 17 when the relationship began, 18 and 19 when it ended, in a bad situation. Any positive experiences with them? Of course, but the venom I feel now overwhelms the warmth of that love. Darkest thoughts. I sometimes fantasize of snapping the neck of the girl I currently love. There are nights when I feel so ill, and the only thing I can imagine to soothe the numb hurt is running naked and intoxicated through dark woods, tearing apart deer and mountain lions with my bare hands, and sinking my mouth into their warm flesh. Now, that was very descriptive. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. You know, one of the things I love about the surveys is, you know, because they are anonymous, that you guys get to really, really let go of the stuff that bounces around inside of us. Darkest secrets. My ex-girlfriend used to steal her mother's Xanax and give it to me while she was having a deluded pseudo-affair in the eye of all my peers. I was stuck at home in bed with mono and a chronic pain flare-up. Taking those stolen drugs to put myself to sleep was the only thing that kept me alive. Whenever I was awake, I would sob and scream and pound my head and hands on the headboard of my bed. I wanted to die. sexual fantasies most powerful to you? I used to get a somewhat sexual thrill out of imagining a beautiful, dark-haired, older woman tearing me apart with a small knife. Sharing that makes me feel small. What, if anything, would you like to say to someone you haven't been able to? I'd tell my alcoholic dad that I forgive him for his emotional absence during my childhood, but that the way he now neglects my youngest brother and uses him as a pawn in my parents' divorce is revolting and unforgivable. My baby brother is not his toy. What, if anything, do you wish for? Calm. I likely have borderline personality disorder and am currently in therapy for my BPD tendencies. I'm exhausted by the intensity of my feelings. I wish I knew calm and stability, and I wish I could steal my youngest brother away from the messiness of my parents' divorce. I wish we could drive away together and spend an eternity eating breakfast in diners and singing along to Bruno Mars. I wish I could keep him safe and smiling. Have you shared these things with others? Some of it I've shared in bits and pieces to various people. It has generally gone well, but I will often downplay the effect my experiences and illnesses have on me. I can't seem to convey just how twisted my world looks, how heavy my heart is, how sick I feel. I'm rotting. How do you feel after writing these things down? Lost. Is there anything you'd like to share with someone who shares your thoughts or experiences? I'm here too. Wow, thank you so much for going so, so fucking deep on this one. And I'm so sorry that you're in such pain. But there are other people that would understand you. And the struggle, the first hurdle is finding those people, finding our family of choice. Because a lot of times, you know, the caregivers we're given or the hand that we're dealt in life, there's just no way to make that work. And, or at least, we should consider other options instead of trying to change the people around us. These are some, or just one love filled out by Grace. Oh, Grace. Didn't know my dog could fill out a survey. I love seeing my little sister laugh so hard she can't breathe, usually over a bad joke that she has just made. It reminds me that there is still so much pure, innocent happiness in the world. Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And then finally, this is a happy moment filled out by a woman who calls herself Misunderstood Mary. She writes, I would ideally put this in story about therapy, but I also think it fits perfectly here. I need to shout out to my therapist. I've been seeing her about a year, and I can't put into words what a pillar of growth she has been for me. I do not feel like I rely on her. Rather, she's extremely encouraging for me to regain some of my own strength and confidence. I was having an exhausting day, and some things came up with my family that I felt very triggered by in the moment. I messaged her, asking her if she was available to give me an unemergent phone call, and then I needed some perspective. She called me no more than 10 minutes later. She was driving, but had me on Bluetooth. I didn't once feel like she was distracted or yesing me. She gave me exactly what I needed in that moment, a real genuine ear, and some real words of truth and encouragement. We spoke for 45 minutes and I felt so seen and heard. It's a simple happy moment, but I wanted to share. Throughout my struggles over the last 5 years, my diligence in sticking with therapy, even when I didn't want to go, has been my rock. Yes, we have some sort of trust going on between us, but I try to remember that she is there to help me grow. I feel incredibly grateful for finding a therapist that fits me and strives every minute to help me fortify myself. Learning to understand the fear that was holding me back from asking for help and setting boundaries, holy moly, talk about unearthing ancient old patterns in my brain. I'm in no place to give advice about anything related to this, but from my experience, a good fit with a therapist is incredibly healing, hard work. Love it. Love it. You know, a lot of times the most scary phrase in the world is saying, please help me, or I need help, or I don't know. But it can also be, at least, you know, let me speak for myself, it was the fork in the road that led me to a life that I love. And I'm so glad that I got to a place where I knew I was going to die if I didn't ask for help. And it opened up this beautiful, beautiful life for me. And yeah, it's been filled with struggle and difficulty and confusion and a lot of two steps forward, one step back. But ultimately, I love the life I've carved out. I don't feel cornered by it. And I love the connection I have with the people whose friendship I found because I asked for help. And I found out how similar other people's struggles are and that we're able to bond over that. And it's such a deep feeling of connection. I'm just grateful. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you're out there and you're struggling, you are not alone. And thanks for listening.
Everybody I know is bizarrely beautifully
everybody
fucked up
I know
in some weird way.
Bizarrely beautifully
everybody
fucked up in some weird way.
Bizarrely beautifully fucked up in some weird way.